Welcome to another episode of the PFF College Football Show. I'm your host, Max Chalk, alongside my co-host, Dalton and Wasp. We got the PFF Dalton right there, too, so make sure you follow him on Twitter or X, whatever you call it now, if you haven't already. But Dalton, we are deep into draft season right now, so we thought it'd be fun to give our top five players at every offensive position in the 2024 NFL draft, in addition to a sleeper at every offensive position in the NFL draft. Basically, you know, we looked at the consensus big board. Outside of the top 100 prospects would constitute a sleeper for us. It basically means, like, there'll probably be a day three pick in the NFL draft. But, man, I'm excited to get into our top fives with you, man.
Oh, this was the most fun part to me, especially going back multiple years for every player and just seeing kind of where the flaws started and where things got patched up and how the strengths got even better. And finding these sleepers actually for me was the most fun part. And there's so many guys at certain positions, especially at receiver and at offensive tackle to pick from. I just think you, especially the deeper positions in this class, this was a boatload of fun. And I can't even wait to do the defensive side of this next week to see these guys progress and kind of translate all the traits to the NFL style is going to continue to be a lot of fun. But this was about as much fun as I've had prepping for an episode.
Dude, same. I had so much fun doing this. So let's start off with our quarterbacks, obviously the most important position on the field. Why don't you run down your top five list right now?
Oh, you're making me go first. Deal. All right, here we go. I am actually taking the hot route and going with Jaden Daniels first. I'm going Jaden Daniels one, Caleb Williams 2, Drake May 3. I think it's the top three is very clear, and I've told you the entire time I think it's razor thin between all three of them. I think you could make a justification for taking any of the three first if you're the Bears. Then I've got Michael Penix at 4 and Bo Nix at 5. I know J.J. McCarthy's the hot name, but this is kind of loosely, honestly, this has kind of been my top five through the entire process here, and I think the hardest debate, yes, is between 1 and 2. At the top, but I love Jaden Daniels' game. Best player in college football in 2023 at any position, like, no question. Most consistent passer, best runner by far. I'm gonna be honest, Max, I was digging into even some of the running numbers. The decade that we've been doing PFF college, there's two guys that stand above everybody else running. It's Jaden Daniels and it's Lamar Jackson, and then it's everybody else. Okay, so that's first with the base and just the athleticism and the danger. He is honestly, I was messing around too with our elusiveness equation. He's honestly as hard to tackle as Bijan Robinson as a quarterback. It's crazy. He might be the best runner in the NFL right now. Then you go to the passing, and then just the substantial improvement this year. Look, I see all these stats now that go out about, you know, his entire career and pressure to sack and this and that and the other thing. The more, and I even went back and watched the Arizona State stuff, the more I watch that and the more I look at that Arizona State situation and everything that went down there, that's all irrelevant to me. I don't care. I really only care really about all these guys, like, because I don't care about Bo Nix at Auburn, I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't really care about Penix at Indiana other than the injury stuff, but the medicals seem to check out. I think the last 2 years is the most fair way to evaluate these guys. And the top three, especially over the last 2 years, I think are just about as even as it gets, especially when you account for Daniels running. And Daniels 2023, again, he was the best player in college football. When you go back and look at the turmoil at Arizona State and you look at LSU, this year at LSU was really the first time that he had 2 years in a row that was really just a stable situation where there was nothing going on. You go back to 2019, really good freshman year, won 8 games, solid stuff. 2020, they only played 4 games because of COVID. 2021, there was a cloud over Arizona State. They had coaches getting suspended. They had all sorts of stuff with recruiting violations. They still managed to win 8 games. And then he leaves Arizona State, and they just fall apart completely. And then it's back to square one at LSU. This was the first time for a second year in a row he had a stable situation, and all of a sudden he was the best player in college football. I think Williams is incredible. I do think he's a wild horse. Okay, I think there's development that does need to happen there. If you coach him wrong, you know, there's still ball security issues at times late in plays, right? Jaden Daniels has the best turnover-worthy play rate of any Power 5 quarterback that we've charted. Okay, I think there is a level of safe. Like, I don't see a whole lot of bust with Jaden Daniels. And I get that Caleb's going to go first, but I really honestly believe he's Lamar Jackson with an even smoother throwing motion. I really do.
So you think, you just said you think he's the best runner in the NFL, right? When you get, do you think he's better than Lamar Jackson as a runner, is what you're saying, or no?
I think that's the only argument we could have is between him and Lamar. And if you look at the college numbers, those two guys stand above everybody else over the last decade when it comes to running the football. I think it's those two. Those two guys stand above everybody else.
Wow. I didn't know you were actually going to put Jay in number one, man. That's pretty surprising. But, all right, I'll go with my top five list right now, so we'll get into it more. At number one, obviously, I got Caleb Williams, the USC quarterback. Two, Drake May, North Carolina. Three, I have Jaden Daniels from LSU. Four, J.J. McCarthy from Michigan. Five, Michael Penix Jr. from Washington. And my sleeper I wanted to shout out was Michael Pratt from Tulane. So I obviously still have Caleb Williams number one and Drake May number two. To me, it's more because we've seen nothing but elite play from them. I mean, even elite play from Caleb Williams back when he was in high school. I mean, he was a five-star recruit coming out of high school, lived up to the hype immediately at Oklahoma as a true freshman, won the Heisman Trophy as a true sophomore, was still elite this past season. I still think, man, with his arm talent, with everything he accounts for in terms of his creativity, he's still pretty clearly the number one option for me. And I think over the last decade, I'd probably say Andrew Luck, Trevor Lawrence, and then Caleb Williams, like right underneath that, with maybe Joe Burrow in that same tier with Caleb Williams. I think he's special, man. I think he's still pretty clearly, for me, the number one option in this draft. And yeah, I think something to keep in count. I think he was playing a lot of hero ball this past year for USC because he had to, because the defense was that bad. And also the offense, yeah, they had some nice pieces, but I mean, it wasn't nearly as talented as, say, the offense that Jaden Daniels had at LSU, where you had two first round receivers and Malik Neighbors and Brian Thomas Jr., two potential first-round tackles in next year's draft in Will Campbell and Emory Jones. Like, Caleb Williams kind of on an island for a lot of last year, but I still think he's pretty clearly the top guy. I love Drake May as well. I mean, even more on an island than Caleb Williams was. He was by himself, basically, on that North Carolina team. He still has been elite for 2 years. So it's kind of the age. And I know, age for quarterbacks, we've seen Joe Burrow prove that doesn't really matter as much. But it matters for me when Jaden Daniels kind of took some time to and really had this 1 year of elite production, whereas Caleb and Drake had 2+ years of elite production immediately. Like, we've seen nothing but elite production from them. So that's why I like them more. Also, I think the arm talent from them is better than Jaden Daniels, who I think could, you know, struggle with velocity sometimes as well. But I like Jaden Daniels a lot. Obviously, he's still number three for me. I like J.J. McCarthy, too, as a developmental option at four. Scared to start him right away. I'm scared of the top five hype, even number two overall hype that we're getting from him right now. But I still think he's got a good chance to be a starter in the league. And then I got Michael Penix Jr. rounding out my top five, who I still think has the arm talent to become a starter in the NFL, and Bo Nix would be a close six for me as well. But all right, so I got Caleb Williams number one. You have Jaden Daniels number one. What about your sleeper, Dolan? What about Jordan Travis? What's kind of your case for him as your sleeper?
Honestly, minus the injury, I think he would easily be QB7 in this draft. And to be honest, when I went back and looked at the tape, and you know, he says I think he was talking about it might be good by June or July to start practicing. I actually think he's clearly, when I look at the rest of the quarterbacks past the top six, I don't think there's any question that Jordan Travis is the best, most consistent football player. I know Rattler's got talent. I know your guy Michael Pratt has talent, but Jordan Travis, extremely athletic, is not loose with the football at all. I'll admit his accuracy is spotty at times. You know, sometimes it can even be random. He does have a funky kind of like baseball-ish throwing motion. But his athleticism, his fearlessness, and just his, like, he's just got guts, man, when he plays football. Like, I think people forget. They had Keon Coleman and Trey Benson and Johnny Wilson and all this. But when push came to shove, anytime Florida State got in a tough situation, it was Jordan Travis creating. And he was also, I believe, he's the highest graded passer over the last couple years in this draft, throwing into tight windows. So it's just the combination of athletic and fearless. I think if you asked anyone during the season last year, take all these guys on this list beyond these top six, okay? Travis, Rattler, Pratt, Talia, Carter, Bradley, whoever else is getting thrown in this late round conversation, you go, who's the best football player? And I think 100 out of 100 people would tell you Jordan Travis. I think the injury is the only thing giving people pause right now. But for me, I think he's pretty solidly QB7 in this draft. I would take him on his traits. They have to clean up his footwork and throwing motion and make things move a little bit faster. But I think he's just clearly the step above the rest of like the day two and three guys.
Okay, so you take him above guys like Spencer Rattler even too then?
I think Rattler's the only one in that same conversation, and then it's everybody else. But I would take Travis over Rattler based on what we've seen the last 2 or 3 years out of Jordan Travis.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's fair. I like Jordan Travis a lot. He actually would have been my sleeper if you didn't take him. But I'll go with Michael Pratt here too. I think kind of the opposite in Jordan Travis, where Travis kind of has that, you know, weird delivery sometimes where it looks like he's almost like a pitcher on a baseball diamond the way he follows through. Pratt doesn't really have that issue, man. He's got really good fundamentals. Again, like Travis, doesn't have a great arm, but he's got really good touch passes down the field. I think Michael Pratt got some like Baker Mayfield a little bit in him when I was watching him. I think he's a guy that could potentially become a starter down the line. I wouldn't bank on it, but if you're asking me, you know, if you're looking at the guys outside of, you know, I don't think Spencer Rattler would constitute a sleeper because, again, he's a consensus top 100 prospect, so we didn't count him in this. But if you're looking for guys outside the top 100 that could become a starter down the line or start some games for you down the line, I would probably say Michael Pratt is probably the guy that I would go with most over guys like Jordan Travis and stuff like that. I do think it's close between the two of them, though. But I like Michael Pratt as a, you know, developmental option, as a guy who maybe you take in the third or fourth round and see what you got in him. So, again, I like him. I think he's got, obviously, the tools aren't great, but I think he's got really good touch passes and I think really good fundamentals as well. And I think he's a guy that you could potentially draft and stash for a couple years and see what you got down the line in him. All right, let's go over to our running back rankings right now. It's a pretty wide open running back class. I'm excited to see how we stack up these five. So, Dolan, what are your top five running backs in this draft?
All right, so I've got Jonathan Brooks from Texas first. I think of all these guys, he just looks, when you watch him, he just looks the most like an NFL running back. I think there's a little bit, like, it was weird. The more I was watching him, I kind of think he runs, like, he's a lot smaller, but he kind of runs like Derrick Henry a little bit. Like, it's more of a one cut. Not a whole lot. He's more of a cutter than a wiggler, and guys just bounce off of him, and he's probably got high 4.4, low 4.5 speed. I think Brooks just looks the most like an NFL running back. Blake Corum, second for me. I think out of the entire class, he plays the position better than anybody. Blake Corum is so fundamentally sound, it's crazy. Yeah. Like, the job that Mike Hart did with him at Michigan was unbelievable. Just watching his tape, I don't know that I ever actually saw him do anything wrong. Like, he bounces when he's supposed to bounce. That last run against Alabama is basically the epitome of Blake Corum darn near every play. Mm-hmm. It's just constantly great. There's no wasted motion. The cuts are excellent. The vision's excellent. I think he plays the position better than anybody. And second in that category behind him, Ray Davis, man. I'm going to be honest. Ray Davis is the biggest riser for me out of this entire group. I was expecting to watch all these backs and have Ray Davis like sixth or seventh. And the more I watch him, kind of that category of like playing the position the best, I would put him second behind Corum. And he ran the drills a lot better at the combine than I thought he would. And I had to really dig back in to this year and how bad that situation at Kentucky was around him. We talked about it during the season. Kentucky's offense was basically hoping Ray Davis is Superman that day. And if they had better blocking, he would have been. I think there's some hidden tape here, especially at Vandy. His receiving ability at Vandy was really nice. The two biggest plays he made in the upset of Louisville were in the receiving game with a wheel and a screen. I think there's some all-around talent that Ray Davis has that is getting really, really underrated. I think he's as good as any back in this class. Four, I have Trey Benson, home run speed, can break tackles, wicked stiff arm. The quickness and the lateral agility isn't top notch. I think his stop and start is kind of questionable, but Trey Benson at the end of it all could be the best back in this draft if his feet get a little bit better. And then at five, I was really between Jalen Wright and Bucky Irving, and I went with Wright based on the traits and what we saw in the combine and the top end speed. Some things to work on for him too, fundamentally, like his vision and working through tight spaces, I think needs some work. But the home run speed is real. I mean, if he gets a crease, if he gets even with your linebackers, he's gone. He's going 80 yards. We've seen that multiple times. I think you're drafting Jalen Wright based on traits more than like fundamentally sound football for me, like Corum and Davis. Mm-hmm. But the traits are top notch. If you can get Jalen Wright, you know, his fundamentals right, he could also be the best back in his class.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty wide open top five, and we actually have a lot of similar names. It just completely wildly different orders, which I think is kind of a microcosm of this one running back class. That it's going to be interesting to see how they actually go on draft night. So my top five, I got Trey Benson actually at number one, Jonathan Brooks at number two, Jalen Wright number three, Blake Corum four. I actually have Marshawn Lloyd as my number five running back from USC. Starting with Benson, one of the most important things I look for in a running back is how well you break tackles. There is nobody better in this draft breaking tackles than Trey Benson. If you look at the last 2 years, he is in the 100th percentile for running backs in terms of how many more forced missed tackles he has per attempt. About, I think, 40% forced missed tackle rate over the last 2 years. This guy is an elite athlete. I agree with you. You know, he's got to work on some stuff, you know, lateral agility wise and trusting his vision and you know, taking the cutback lanes when they're there, because he kind of is a guy that, you know, tries to go to the sideline too much, which is another guy I'll get into in just a little bit. I think is very similar to him in a lot of regards. But, man, that athleticism, that production in terms of breaking tackles, I think is pretty rare. And I would take the best tackle breaking backs in college have really translated well to the NFL. Guys like Bijan Robinson and other guys like that, and Javonte Williams when he's healthy. I think that Trey Benson has those kind of traits, and in a wide open class, I probably bet on those traits more than anyone else right now, especially with my number two back, Jonathan Brooks. You mentioned the torn ACL kind of muddies it up a little bit with him. He's a guy that could have been my number one back if he didn't, but man, it's such an impressive year for him this year. I mean, he was the number three running back at Texas last year behind Bijan Robinson and Roschon Johnson, and then this year, I mean, you thought, oh, after losing those two great backs that Texas would take a step back in the running game. They really did not, man, and he's got NFL ready vision, I think, already. Good athlete as well. I was really impressed by him. It's just really, how can he bounce back from the injury? And again, it was a torn ACL, which is, you know, easier and easier to bounce back for by as we go on throughout these years, because, you know, back then it used to be a devastating injury. Now guys are, you know, bouncing back from it all the time, but still I want to see him bounce back from it. Jalen Wright I have from Tennessee. As you'll kind of see in my top five, I really gravitate towards athletic traits, man, and Jalen Wright is one of the most athletic guys in this class, especially with the running back position. I really gravitate towards those traits. He's kind of, you know, he doesn't really have a lot of carries in his career, which is good, because, you know, one is doesn't have the mileage on his legs, but two, I don't think his vision is all the way there yet either, but he's a home run hitter, man, and I think he could be a guy who really produces in the NFL if he can kind of develop his vision more. And also, I think something that's underrated about him, and I think Trevor Sikma did a really good job pointing this out, he's the best pass protecting back probably in this draft too, so I think that matters in him getting on the field as well. Four, I got Blake Corum from Michigan, who, again, yeah, I think you broke it down pretty well. Not an elite athlete by any means, but I mean, his agility is fantastic. His vision is fantastic. He's just going to be a productive back in the NFL, most likely for the Los Angeles Chargers. I could definitely see Jim Harbaugh taking him somewhere on day two, probably. And then number five, a guy who's actually really similar to my number one guy in Trey Benson is Marshawn Lloyd, who is an elite tackle breaker who I thought was criminally underutilized by USC this past season. The thing with him, though, again, is like the vision is just not all the way there yet. And he's also a guy that always tries to look to get to the sideline, doesn't really look for the cutback lanes. He's got to fix that, because if he does, I think he'd be really good. But again, this past season, 99th percentile in forced missed tackles per attempt at about 41%. So Marshawn Lloyd, an elite tackle breaker, elite athlete. And that's kind of what I gravitate towards, and that's why I have him as my number five running back in this class right now. All right, Dalton, who's your sleeper in this draft for the running back position?
Oh, it's my favorite player we're going to talk about today. It's Frank Gore Jr. from Southern Miss. Absolutely. Look, he, as you might guess, is just incredibly well-schooled on playing the position. He, right behind, so I've got Corum and Davis as the guys of, like, who know how to play running back. I would put Frank Gore right behind them at third on this list. Just so, like, just things and talent that you can't explain. He doesn't have top-end speed. He might even have, like, low 4.6-ish top-end speed. That's the only, you know, but his dad was the same way, right? He just hit the hole, and he got first downs, and he just hammered you over and over and over. And that situation at Southern Miss was not good. They made a bowl game one of his 4 years, and in that bowl game, he had 324 yards rushing. So it's just, when he gets blocking, he's an absolute animal. He's got legitimate shake in one-on-one tackling situations. His vision is excellent. He really – bounces here and there, but I think it's in part out of necessity. Southern Miss just couldn't block anybody. And, you know, and people asked him at the combine, hey, have you ever, did you think about transferring or what? And he was just very loyal to Southern Miss and just wanted to carry the load and be loyal to them. So I'm not, you know, I'm not even going to put any of that on him. Like, he easily could have gone somewhere else and had 12, 13, 1400 yards, probably at a Power 5 school. I'm just being honest. I think just how well schooled he is and how he plays the position. And again, he's got better, I think he's got like better shake than his dad. He's not as thick in the lower body, but like one-on-one, he could embarrass some guys with some moves, man. I'm telling you right now, the only thing, if Frank Gore ran a like a low, like something like a 4.45, he might be the best back in this draft. The top end speed's the only thing keeping him out of the high rounds, but he's as fundamentally sound and as tough as any back in this class. And Max, he can throw it a little bit. He had 8 big-time throws in his career playing a little bit of quarterback for Southern Miss, too.
Yeah, if you need a quarterback, Frank Gore Jr. might be a sleeper quarterback for you in this draft. So I love Frank Gore Jr., man. He's a guy that I've always been a big fan of at Southern Miss. And it's awesome that when one Frank Gore leaves the NFL a couple years ago, we got another one right in there as well. And he's a really, really good player. Pretty wild, man. So many sons in this draft that we got. I think Terrell Owens' son, I just saw. I think Tariq was his name. I think he's working out as well. Obviously, Marvin Harrison Jr., Frank Gore Jr. There's a few others in this draft. Obviously,
Brendan Rice.
Yeah, Brendan Rice. Good call. Luke McCaffrey. Guys like that, dude. It's insane how many sons are ending in the NFL right now. Kind of making us feel old, honestly. But guy I want to go with for my sleeper, a guy I just fell in love with, man, the more I watched him, Tyrone Tracy from Purdue. So a little bit of background on him. This guy was a wide receiver for Purdue to start his career. They moved him to running back this past year. He was fantastic as a running back for Purdue this last year. Also an elite athlete for the position as well. But man, I mean, you look at the advanced metrics right now, 99th percentile in forcing tackles per attempt at about 40%. Really good yards after contact, obviously. His gap grade was 100th percentile, zone grade 87th percentile. I mean, this guy, in his first year at running back, he is an older player, don't get me wrong. I believe he's a sixth-year player. But usually for running backs, you kind of get scared of that, and you're like, oh, because you know how quickly the running back falls off. But it's not like this is a guy that had a ton of carries throughout his career. He's a guy who just started learning positions, so that's why I'm kind of throwing out the whole sixth-year senior stuff, because he's kind of a brand-new running back that doesn't have as much mileage on his legs. So even though the age might concern some people, I don't really think it applies to him too much when you look at other running backs who are sixth-year players, because, like I said, he's just a converted wide receiver, so obviously he's got really good pass-catching ability. And then, man, as a runner this past year, he was fantastic. And like I said, I really like elite athletic traits for running backs, and he was fantastic at the combine as well. 86th percentile 10-yard split, 95th percentile vertical jump at about 40 inches. He was a really, really good athlete, man. So Tyrone Tracy, a guy that won't go until day three, and I've even seen some like fifth, sixth round stuff for him. I loved his tape, what we saw at Purdue. So he's a guy that I would keep an eye on in this running back class, and what's a wide open running back class, honestly. So let's go over to our receiver rankings now, Dalton, which is a pretty loaded receiver class. But it's pretty clear, I think, who the top guys are. So who is your top five right now?
Yeah, the top three is pretty simple. I think most people have this, although there's been some debate lately about one versus two. But I'm sticking with Marvin Harrison, one. Just the smoothest, most translatable guy. When you think about guys like Larry Fitzgerald and Davante Adams and guys like that, that's Marvin Harrison. He's just so darn fundamentally sound. Another son, well-schooled, right? Just can just do it all. Malik Nabers at two, the only like counter-argument is Nabers probably better after the catch than Harrison is, but Harrison's so darn smooth with everything else that it just can't be ignored. Odunze, the easy three, last year would have been easily the best receiver in the draft, and I think he would be a lot of years. Odunze is about as good a wide receiver three as it gets. Four and five were the hard part for me, and I watched probably six or seven guys that could contend for these spots, but I have Mitchell and Thomas four and five. I was going into this thinking Thomas would be four. I just really like the nuance of Mitchell's route running. Adonai Mitchell, just like, there's just more in the package. Like, Thomas's speed is otherworldly explosive. Like, yeah. And I know they ran very similar 40s at the combine, but Thomas's speed shows up on tape. But I like the diversity in Mitchell's game the more I watch him. The route running, like when he gets guys stacked up behind him when he's running certain cuts, like especially on an in cut, you won't find anybody better. Just jab steps. There's like certain little things in Adonai Mitchell's route running that make him, I think, give him a higher floor than Thomas. Mm-hmm. Whereas Brian Thomas, like, if they can unlock the speed and coach him off the line of scrimmage, and I think he needs to stop playing around so much after the catch. I think, dude, just run, because nobody's catching you, honestly. Like, he's just straight line. He's as dangerous as it gets. He could be, I think it comes down to those two with team fit as well. Like, I would love Brian Thomas in Dallas. I've talked about Adonai Mitchell in Detroit would be just an unreal fit. I think it comes down to that more so. The talent is, if I could put a tied for fourth here, I would, but I know you probably wouldn't let me. You want to put me on the spot. So I switched it up the more I watched Mitchell's tape, and I went Mitchell 4 and Thomas 5, but it's like razor thin, incredibly close.
Yeah, dude, I don't know if you saw the Malik Nabers pro day. It's like going on literally right now. He ran a 4.35 according to some scouts at the pro day. Stupid, dude.
40. And I think I saw a 42-inch vert.
42-inch vert, and what was the broad? I gotta find the broad jump. The broad jump was
10.9. I think it was
10.9. Yeah, you're right. 10.9, dude.
Filthy.
It's like, it's insane. Yeah, Malik Nabers was fantastic at his pro day, obviously. And yeah, he's obviously going to be one of my top receivers as well. Marvin Harrison Jr., I still have him my number one guy. I'm not one of the ones who is saying Malik Nabers is, you know, would be the number one receiver in this class, but I think it's relatively close. But I also think Marvin Harrison Jr. is like a once in a decade type of talent, which makes you think, okay, Malik Nabers is also like in that range as well because of how good he is. So those are pretty clearly the top two for me. I think both of them could be, or maybe should be, top five overall picks in this NFL draft. That's how special those two are. And then Roma Dunze at number three, man. I think he is a guy that he is a victim of being in this class, because if you look at a lot of pass receiver classes, he would be pretty clearly the number one guy in the draft. He's an elite athlete, elite in contested catch situations. You just got guys like Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, who I like a little bit more than him. But again, he's the number three receiver in this class, but he is no consolation prize, man. He is an elite, elite talent himself. I would take all three of those guys in the top 10. Now, there is, I think, a pretty significant drop from those three to the next, but I still think there's some really, really talented players. I have Brian Thomas Jr. at number four. You mentioned he's a great vertical threat, one of the best in this class, I think, with his size and speed, explosiveness, and all that. I have him at number four right now, led the nation in touchdown catches this past year in the LSU receiver room, in addition to Jayden Daniels throwing the ball, QB1, according to Dalton. Pretty ridiculous passing game. And then at number five, I have Adonai Mitchell from Texas. A little bit of effort concerns. I don't know if this popped up for you when you were watching him, man. Even sometimes when he was targeted, he seemed to be running like half speed on his route. So got to clean that up, I think. But I mean, he is one of the most gifted receivers in this class. 6'2", runs a 4.4 or even a 4.3. I forgot what the exact number was for him, but he is a freak athlete. Can obviously go up and get it. Just got to, you know, clean up some stuff. A really fluid route runner. That was something I really was surprised by a little bit when I was watching his tape over the last few weeks. But I just think some effort stuff is there with him that I didn't love. But I have him at number five. And then some other guys that, like, Ladd McConkey, I hated leaving out of my top five, but he was right there as well. Troy Franklin's another guy I really like. I mean, it is, if you need a receiver, man, get one this year, because it is truly a special, special receiver class this year. Who is the sleeper, though, Dalton, that you wanted to shout out in this receiver class?
There's so many. There's going to be receivers in round five and six that are going to be solid players. And I think I'm going second generation again here, Max. Give me Luke McCaffrey out of Rice, man. It got lost on me in the process somewhere that he came into college at Nebraska and then his first year at Rice as a quarterback. He's only been playing receiver 2 years, and he switched to receiver at Rice and was immediately their best football player, right? Last year, led tied for the national lead with Roma Dunze in contested catches, and he played two less games. Like, he's tough as nails. He's a solid route runner who's getting better. He ran, I believe, was it a 4.46 at the Combine? I think that was it. He beat Christian, which I know that was a big deal on Combine Day. He's just a football player, man. And you know what? For him to be as good as he is, only playing 2 years at receiver at Rice, where, again, he's another player where the rest of the situation around him wasn't great. Rice's offense was basically get Luke McCaffrey the ball as many times as possible. And he was up to the challenge. He can play outside a little bit, plays in the slot a lot. I assume in the NFL he's going to play in the slot mostly. But you want a guy who's just like fundamentally sound, knows how to play the game, high IQ, and tough as nails. I think Luke McCaffrey is, you know, he's, I don't know if he'll be as good at his position as Christian is at his, but I think he's just a really high floor guy that if you told me even as high as round four, he went, he's a solid player. I love him. I just love watching him.
Dude, I love Luke McCaffrey too. I think he's definitely a sleeper in this class. The one I wanted to go with, though, and I know we actually argued over it because we both, I think, wanted him at one point, is Malik Washington, the Virginia receiver, transferred over from Northwestern. This, again, he's not going to wow you with his size. He's 5'9", 191 pounds, which probably is going to limit him to being a slot receiver in the NFL. Only has about 30-inch arms as well. But, man, this guy's tape is fantastic. He was one of the highest-graded receivers in the country this past season. He is elite after the catch. I mean, he could break tackles as well as almost anyone in this class. I loved watching it. And even, dude, I understand he's not the biggest, but he was pretty good in contested situations as well. I believe he caught about 65% of his contested targets this past year. So I love Malik Washington. I think he's a guy that obviously is probably a slot-only receiver at that size, but he is a tough guy to cover, man. He's a really good route runner as well. Really good acceleration, really good change of direction ability. I really like, and again, like I said, he's elite after the catch. So I like him a lot for a team needing a slot receiver. Again, he's going to go in day three probably, but he's a really good athlete, I think, as well. He had a 99th percentile vertical jump at 43 inches. So I'm a big, big fan of Malik Washington, man. And I think he's a guy, again, slot only, but I still think he'd be a really valuable piece in the NFL. And if you can get him somewhere in the fourth round, like he's being projected right now, I think that guy's that's a slam dunk steal for whoever gets him at that spot. All right, let's go to our tight end rankings now. This, to me, Dalton, was a pretty hard position to get a top five for, but why don't you count us down from your top five tight ends right now, the 2024 draft?
Yeah, the top two were easy. Brock Bowers, the GOAT college tight end. Yep. I think we've said enough about Brock Bowers for the last 6 months to know he's the best one. Jatavion Sanders is clearly second here. I think it was easy. I was so impressed with his ability to catch balls that were outside of his frame. Like, Quinn Ewers is not the most precise thrower in the country, and Sanders made every catch look easy.
Yep.
He can beat you up the seam. As good, he's very much like where Bowers is kind of this new age yak, kind of George Kittle tight end. Sanders is very classic, but he's really, really good. The rest of this is where it was hard. This took a lot of digging, and I came out of it most impressed next with Ben Sinnott from Kansas State. Really versatile, better athlete on tape than I thought he was. A six-sport athlete, Max. This is something I learned watching his presser at the Combine. Football, baseball, track, golf, tennis, and hockey. He actually played hockey his entire life until he was like 18 or 19. So just a really versatile athlete, a guy. You see him in line. You see him in the slot. He's a solid route runner. Plays some fullback. Like, I think I can't imagine Kyle Shanahan wouldn't look at this guy and all the things he could do and pick him up. Just really just rugged, physical, and fundamentally sound. I think Ben Sinnott jumped out third for me. Cade Stover, fourth. I love Cade Stover. I think anytime he was involved, especially with the ball in his hands at Ohio State, something good happened. I think he's a lot like Sinnott, with just maybe like just a quarter step less athleticism. But I like Cade Stover, like a lot of these guys I like to put together team fits and where they would fit the best. I think Cade Stover, any of the 32 teams could take him. And yeah, he's immediately your tight end too, and he's just a good football player. It's kind of hard to describe it anyway other than that. Like, he can catch the ball. He can block some. He's got over 500 special team snaps in his career. Cade Stover is going to go somewhere and do good things. And five was the hardest because there's probably five or six guys, and this isn't the deepest tight end class. But I went with someone who's a little bit different, Jaheim Bell from Florida State. I think he can do things with the ball in his hand that nobody outside of maybe the top two guys in this draft that can do. He is small. He's not going to block a whole lot, but that's also at less of a premium in the NFL now than is, you know, what you can do with the ball in your hands. He's as good after the catch maybe as anyone other than Brock Bowers in this draft. He's weird for sure. I think he's more in like the Delanie Walker, Jonnu Smith even. I thought about Jonnu Smith a lot when I was watching his tape, where like, he's a weapon. Like, don't ask him to do things he's not good at and like block in line and do all that. Like, he's more weapon than actual tight end. He's just getting lumped in with the tight ends because that's just the label. But I think Jaheim Bell's a real weapon in the passing game that could help somebody.
Yeah, I really hated leaving off Jaheim Bell. I was just worried about that size. And again, like, he fits a very specific type of role. I think you said it really well, like Delanie Walker, Jonnu Smith type. Like, only a finite amount of offenses actually have that kind of tight end in their system. So that's why I love him too, man. I really do love his tape, especially when you go back to South Carolina days. I mean, he was taking handoffs. He was like their leading rusher 1 year, I think, as well. So I really like the athleticism he has, and I like what he does after the catch. But it's just projecting to the NFL is where I had some struggles with him. So he would have been number six for me, but I just barely left him out of the top five. My top five, obviously, Brock Bowers, number one. We don't have to talk about him. I mean, he's the greatest tight end in college football history, like you said. Also, I mean, you can make the argument he's the best tight end in NFL draft history as well. I truly think Brock Bowers is a special player that is still probably a top five overall prospect for me in this draft. I think he's that good. Even in a loaded draft like this one, he is spectacular. Number two, Jatavion Sanders from Texas. This is a pretty clear top two for me, I think, like you said. Sanders, I will say, Sanders was kind of billed as this elite athlete, and I still think he is. I'm not, you know, going to discount that just based off the combine numbers, but he kind of tested out as kind of like an above average one at the combine, which is a little surprising to me. Again, I don't really lower him too much for that, but I was a little surprised by some of his combine numbers and how they weren't as elite as I thought they were going to be, but I have him at number two. I think, like you said, he's a really good he made a lot of plays for Quinn Ewers that, quite frankly, Quinn Ewers didn't deserve to have made for him on some of the throws he made to him. He really was a really good player in terms of getting the ball and going up and getting it, and also breaking tackles after it as well. Number three, I had Cade Stover, actually, from Ohio State. Really good blocker. I loved his run blocking tape when I was watching him. He's a big, big tight end. I think, actually, Anthony Tresh has Cade Stover as a top 20 overall prospect, he was telling me, in this draft. He is in love with Cade Stover. I'm not quite that high. I think I would take him probably somewhere on day two, but I liked what he did at Ohio State a lot. And also, again, his receiving numbers won't maybe jump off the page like Brock Bowers or Jatavion Sanders. You got to remember, man, that Ohio State receiver room with Marvin Harrison Jr., Emeka Egbuka, guys like that, hey, who's competing for targets with. It's tough to put up great numbers in that offense when you have those guys that are also getting targets in that offense. So I like Cade Stover a lot. I think he could even put up better receiver numbers in the NFL than he did in college. Ben Sinnott I have at number four as well. I think he could play fullback, honestly, like you said. I really do. I think he's a really – he probably was the second best tight end, I would say, in college football this past season behind Brock Bowers. He was fantastic, a really good athlete as well. Love what he does after the catch. Like his route running a little bit too. I like Ben Sinnott a lot. Number five is a Penn State guy. I'm not being a homer here. Theo Johnson, who is the best athlete, I would say, out of any tight end in this class. In fact, he's one of the best athletes we've ever seen at the NFL Combine. He tested out as a 99.5th percentile athlete, according to Kentley Platt from the Relative Athletic Score. But 4.57 40-yard dash, 1.61 10-yard split, 4.19 short shuttle, 39.5-inch vertical, 10-foot-5-inch broad jump, all at 6'6", 259 pounds. This guy is a freak athlete. I still think he's learning position, though, which is why I'm a little hesitant with him. But those traits, man, don't come around often. So I would take him third, fourth round probably, and I still think the agility, I don't think the route running is all the way there with him either. He doesn't really separate as much as you think for a freak athlete like that, but I like Theo Johnson enough for me to have him as tight end number five in this class, but I do think it's a pretty clear drop-off after the top four tight ends in this draft. So who is the sleeper, Dalton, that you have in this tight end class?
You know what? I didn't expect this to be the guy, but I really like Tanner McLaughlin from Arizona. Just solid route runner, very direct. I like his work after the catch. It's not the same as Jaheim Bell, where it's like, oh, you could give him carries. He's got shake and missed tackles, but he's very his feet are excellent from the transition from the catch point to getting directly upfield after the catch. Like, he's really a lot more fundamentally sound than I thought he was. Like, in Arizona, look, they had Tetero and McMillan, and they had Jacob Cowing taking a lot of targets, and Michael Wiley in the backfield for that matter. McLaughlin, I think, had 55 targets on the year, I want to say, but I was impressed with darn near all of them. I just think his approach to, like, the receiving part of the position is as fundamentally sound as it gets. He's a solid route runner, and just, like, there's just something about him that there's, like, no – it's kind of like I said before with Blake Corum. There's, like, no wasted motion. He's just, like, solid. Like, I think he's a guy that coaches are just going to really like having around. They're like, wow, this guy's better than I thought he was. I like Tanner McLaughlin a lot in the receiving game, just as a more traditional moving tight end, like kind of like Jatavion Sanders, but maybe a half step off the athleticism. Mm-hmm. You know, and the one thing I do like this year, I believe he had zero drops this year after six or seven the year before. And a lot of them were just focused in trying to turn upfield after the catch. And he really locked in on that. I think McLaughlin is, I think he's the sleeper. He's a guy, I didn't expect him to be in this spot for me. And the more I was watching him, I was like, wow, he's just really fundamentally sound.
Yeah, I like McLaughlin a lot. He was a guy that would have been on my top 10 list if he was there. But the guy I actually want to shout out here, not really a sleeper if you follow Trevor Sikkema closely, because he actually has this guy as the number three tight end in this class behind Brock Bowers and Tavion Sanders. But it's Eric All from Iowa, who transferred over from Michigan. This guy has had horrible injury luck, man. He had a torn ACL this past season. He actually had minimally invasive spine surgery when he was at Michigan, which ended his season there as well. So obviously those are two pretty big red flags for him in terms of injuries. But his tape, man, when Trevor was kind of singing his praises on the latest episode of NFL Stock Exchange, where they ranked the top five tight ends, so go check it out if you haven't already. But he was, you know, I was like, all right, let me go watch him back. And he's right, man. I really like Eric All a lot. I don't think he'd be a top five tight end for me like he is for Trevor. But he is a elite separator, really good after the catch. And then he's a really willing blocker, man. He's a really, really good blocker. So, again, the injury concerns are there for him, especially when you have spine surgery like that. But and the torn ACL obviously this past season, but I love what he showed at Michigan. I loved what he showed in the limited time he had for Iowa. And obviously Iowa tight ends, man, have worked out in the past before. So Eric All might be the next one, but I'm a big fan of him, man. And you know, shout out to Trevor Sikkema for highlighting him, because yeah, he's a guy that you definitely need to keep an eye on in this draft. Again, the injuries are probably gonna drop him to the day three of the draft, but I think he's worth a flyer, man, because I think he could turn into a starting tight end and maybe even a good starting tight end down the line in the NFL. Now we'll go to the offensive tackle class, which I think is one of the best positions overall in this entire draft, Dalton. Who are your top five tackles in this year's draft?
All right, so this one was a little more straightforward for me, especially the top three. Joe Alt, number one from Notre Dame. He's the best tackle in the class. I think he's the safest pick in the entire draft. I would be beyond shocked if he got by Tennessee at seven. I think it would be the most shocking thing in the draft if he got past there. Two, I'm leaving Olufoshinu at two, man. Yep. I think he's kind of getting, I don't want to say slept on, but like it feels like the stock is moving down for not a whole lot of reason. He's got 3 years at Penn State of elite pass protection. I get that he's not the run blocker that maybe Fuaga or somebody, you know, like a J.C. Latham is, but he's probably the best pure pass protector in this draft, and I think that's a premium that like every team should have on their board, right?
Isn't it so weird how like he's moving down for something that we've known for 2 years now? It's like, we've known this.
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And to be honest with you, like, if I've got two players, two offensive linemen who are even, then
you side the pass protector.
Like I think Fashanu and Fuaga are very, very tight, and I'm kind of taking Fashanu as the pass pro tiebreaker because that's more important. It just is, right? I'm going Fuaga, Talisi Fuaga, third, because he is probably the best pure run blocker, especially in the zone game in this class. I've told you before, I think like Pittsburgh with Arthur Smith would kill to have him. I think the Raiders make a lot of sense. I think he's very safe in the run block game, and he's just not quite the pass protector Fashanu is, but he's still really good. Troy Faiutanu at four for me, kind of like Fashanu, but he did it at an elite level for 1 year instead of three, but still an incredible pass protector, really athletic, tore up the combine and played in an offense that was not like aided by RPOs and screens and all. Like that was a downfield vertical, like NFL pocket style with Penix behind him kind of offense. Faiutanu and the pass pro floor for me is big time. And five, I have J.C. Latham. Massive dude. I think in a gap scheme would work better. I think for a team like the Rams who are kind of transitioning to that, if they wanted a future right tackle, the Bills, the Buffalo Bills, I think would be a team that thinks about him if he got that far down. But just tell me this. Does he remind you a lot of like kind of like Darnell Wright from last year?
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
There's some Darnell Wright in his game, and Latham may even be bigger than that. We know how big Alabama's offensive line was across the board, but I think Latham's just really, really solid. And if you want to add that like get off the bus first guy, then it's J.C. Latham at five.
No, I have a pretty similar top five. Actually, one of the guys that that you don't have, so we have a difference in one player in the top five. But at number one and number two and three even is the same for me. And Joe Alt, Olufoshinu, and Talisa Fuaga. Alt, pretty clearly number one tackle. I've had this take for 2+ years now when everyone was kind of on the Olufoshinu over him train. I've always been a bigger fan of Joe Alt just because I think the run blocking and pass blocking is elite. Both of them. And then also, he tested out as the most athletic offensive tackle at the combine, which personally I wasn't even expecting, but he was fantastic at the combine too. So there really is no holes in this in his game, man. I think he's one of the safest prospects in this draft. I think he's I wouldn't say he's a guarantee to be an all-pro, but I would be pretty surprised if he wasn't one of the best tackles in this league, or at least one of the top 10 tackles in this league. I think he's going to be a superstar in the NFL. So I would take him as the number one tackle pretty easily. And then two and three are similar in that Olufoshinu has a trump card in his pass blocking. Fuaga has a trump card in his run blocking. Fuaga, I will say, is a better pass blocker than Fashanu is as a run blocker, but I think Fashanu is so elite as a pass blocker. His movement skills were so good. I would take him over Fuaga in that draft. And again, like I said, it almost makes no sense for me that something that we knew for Fashanu is all of a sudden dropping him significantly on draft boards. It's like, this isn't a brand new issue. This is something we've known for 2 years, and you're still projecting him in the top 10, and all of a sudden now you're like, oh, I care about this more now. And that makes no sense to me. So I still think a little bit of smokescreen season with him. Maybe I think he will go higher than draft than people think, and he should, honestly, because I still think he's a really good player. And if the Jets take him at 10, I would not hate that at all, honestly. At 4, I have J.C. Latham from Alabama. I've always loved his tape, man. I always thought he's a better pass blocker than people give him credit for. Really good run blocker as well, powerful player. I think he's maybe a right tackle only in the NFL, but I mean, like, we've constantly said this before and again and again, is that right tackles are just as valuable, man, and J.C. Latham is a really, really good one. And at 5, I have Amarius Mims from Georgia. I don't have Troy Fatanu actually in my my top 5, even though I liked him. I just like Mims, man. He, again, only 8 starts in his career, so he's battled injuries in the past, and obviously he sat for a little bit of his career at Georgia, but he is one of the most athletic tackles in this draft, one of the biggest freaks, I think, overall in this draft. And when he's been on the field, man, he's been really, really good as both a pass blocker and run blocker. And some of the metrics with Fatanu aren't as dominant as you would expect. I still think he's a great mover, but I'm a little bit lower on Fatanu than a lot of people right now, and I think he's going to be a top 15 pick, and I don't know if I would take him that high. So I would have Amarius Mims above him right now, but it's still, like I said, it's still a loaded tackle class, and there's still even some other guys we haven't mentioned that could be first-round picks at the tackle class in this draft. But who is the sleeper, Dalton, that you have in this offensive tackle group?
You know, some people like traits and big athleticism, and some people like really, really good football players. And this guy is in the latter. We talked about him all year. Give me Javon Foster, yeah, out of Missouri, man. One of the best run blockers, especially zone blockers, in the country. Solid pass protector. Missouri's O-line went from, like, outside the top 70 last year to inside the top 10 this year. Just a huge, huge unsung reason why they had the year they had. And he's just, look, he's not like the most athletic guy. He's not the tear up the combine guy. And, you know, maybe some people think he should play inside or what have you, but Max, let me tell you something. I found only 3 Power 5 left tackles, okay, in the decade that we've had PFF College, that played 500 snaps at left tackle for 3 consecutive years and graded at an 80 plus in all 3 years. Actually, 4, and I'll give you the previous 3. Ike Ekwonu, Andre Dillard, Peter Skoronski, and the 4th one's Javon Foster. So those first 3 guys were all first-round picks, yep, and Foster is being looked at as like an unathletic, like fifth-round type guy. I disagree with that. I think if you get Javon Foster reasonably in the 4th, and even if you quote-unquote reached and took him in the 3rd, I would not hate it at all. Wicked experience at left tackle. I thought the Senior Bowl was a little unfair to him because they went right ahead and moved him to right tackle. And it's just, you know, some guys switching sides on short notice like that, like, it's not advantageous to him, especially as a not elite athlete, but he's got a rugged style of play. And every year there's a handful of mid-round offensive linemen that are just solid, productive players. I don't think he'd be an all-pro by any means, but I think, like, let's say Pittsburgh doesn't go tackle in the first round, I think it'd be a great fit for him there. Or just like a zone team, especially because they ran a lot of that at Missouri, and some of it is about fit. It's always about fit, too. But I just think Javon Foster has produced too much good tape over the last 3 years, especially to not be considered, you know, higher than what he is right now. I feel like I just don't hear anything about him, you know, in like any national outlets at all.
Dude, we've had a few of positions where we had to decide who would get the sleeper, because he would have been my pick for the sleeper too. I actually want to shout out my my old English teacher, Mr. Herring, Mr. Chris Herring at St. Joe's Metuchen, because he texted me and my brother his big board. He loves the NFL draft too, and he said, "Man, Javon Foster is one of the most slept on prospects in this draft." So he also knows Dalton. So shout out Mr. Herring, because he also knows Javon Foster is an elite player, and I agree with you, man. He would have been my pick for this as well, and honestly, he might be a day two pick for me in this NFL draft. I really like him. He wasn't a bad athlete. I want people to understand that. Like, you look at the relative athletic score, which I keep shouting out is a terrific tool to use when you're scouting these players. He scored as a 63rd percentile athlete for offensive tackle. That's above average still. It's not like he's a bad athlete. Yeah, it's good enough. Exactly. And I think that's something that people don't really understand with him. 92nd percentile vertical jump. He had a 33-inch vertical, which is nuts for a tackle. And then also ran a 179 in the 10-yard split, which is good as well. And he has long arms, over 34.5-inch arms. I mean, I really like Javon Foster, man. And I think he's, like you said, he's really being slept on in this draft, especially with how good he's been. So because I couldn't get Javon Foster, I had to go with someone else. I actually, I know I said I didn't like one of the Washington tackles in this draft, and Troy Fatanu. Not as much. I shouldn't say that. I like him enough to be a first-round pick. I just don't like the hype that he's getting right now. I do like his right tackle, his running mate, in Roger Rosengarten a lot. And I think he deserves to be higher on people's boards than he's getting credit for. Excellent pass protector this past year, 77th percentile in terms of true pass sets, pass blocking. Wasn't a very good run blocker, I will say. He was better the year before. He earned a 76.5 run blocking grade in 2022. It was only 59.6 this past season, but he was a really, really good pass blocker for the blind side of Michael Penix Jr. this past season. So Roger Rosengarten, again, day three pick, like Javon Foster for a lot of people right now, and I think he deserves to get a little bit more love than what he's getting right now. So let's finish it out, Dalton, with our interior offensive line ranking. So combining the guards and centers in this draft, what is your top five right now?
All right, so I've got the easy one first, Jackson Powers Johnson, no question. Best center in the country, Remington. Best interior offensive lineman in the country. Dominated the Senior Bowl. Just no question here about the first spot, possibly a top 20 pick. I think you and I both agreed that Graham Barton, we're going to count him here as an interior offensive lineman, and I don't mind it at all, especially just to get his name on the board. You see the way, like, so he's got experience at center, good experience at center. And even at left tackle, like Duke the last 2 years started doing things with him that really translate. Graham Barton's an excellent athlete, okay? And they started pulling him a lot. And when you talk about those two things, and he was a really effective puller, he understands angles, especially in the zone game. He understands, he's really good in space. He's, I think, actually the single most versatile offensive lineman in this draft. I think Graham Barton could succeed to some level at any of the five spots on the offensive line. So I know a lot of people are projecting him to play inside center, maybe. I think he could play guard. I think the two flaws with him are power rushes, and when you watch probably at least 80% of the time that he got beaten, pass protection was to the inside. So I think he does need to get a little bit stronger, especially if he's going to play guard instead of center. But the athleticism, I think, for him holds up at all five positions. I still think he should get a shot to play tackle.
Same.
Really do.
Yeah.
I think if there's a late round team that wants a left tackle or even a right tackle, he's a really, really good tackle. First off, he's got, you know, his tape at center is solid, and that was as a freshman. Barton's the most versatile lineman in this draft. I really like him, especially we've talked before about the fit in San Francisco. If they were to get him, it's perfect. It's just perfect because they can put him anywhere they need to put him. Third, I have Zach Frazier from West Virginia. He's been moving up. He's really aggressive. He wants to put you on a sled and hurt you. He does. It's just really aggressive, kind of that anchor center. It's not like Jason Kelsey or a guy like that who's moving around flying all over the place doing that. It's more of a classic anchor center. I think better in gap scheme, and I think he's better the closer that guys are to him in the A-gaps. I think that's when he's better. He wants to get his hands on somebody and put him on the sled. You know, he's a former wrestler. He wants to be really, really physical. I think he's a guy that Buffalo, too, I think they're picking at 26 or 27, wherever they're picking. I think it'd be a perfect replacement for Mitch Morse. They don't really have a starting caliber center right now. The more I watched Frazier, the more I went, Buffalo Bills. Put him in front of Josh Allen, get the gap scheme stuff and all the power and everything they've got going, and just let him maul people in that cold weather in Buffalo. Number four, I'll tell you what, the more I watch Christian Haynes from UConn, the more I love him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, wow. Like, the same athleticism as Barton, but Haynes is just a guard. Okay, yeah. So just not as versatile, but man, I'm going to tell you something. Christian Haynes can really, really move. And I talk about understanding angles and where to put his helmet in the zone game. Any of the teams in the back end of the second round that need O-line help at guard, Miami, Green Bay, Philadelphia, if they move Juergens to center, San Francisco. I think there's going to be five or six teams in the back half of the second round. They're going to be killing to have Christian Haynes. He's an immediate starter. Like if Miami got him to replace Robert Hunt, who they just lost in free agency, home run. Mm-hmm. Absolute home run. Really wicked, wicked athlete. And his grade profile, it looked like it dropped down like a little bit this year. And honestly, that was only because of one really bad game against James Madison, who was fantastic. It was like the worst game of his career. Otherwise, Christian Haynes is the same guy, and he's wicked athletic every week. And fifth for me is Cooper Beebe. I think he's just different. I could flip-flop him or Haynes either way, honestly. I think it's a style thing. Beebe's got a little more just straight-line power. But he's versatile. I'll tell you what, he can play the tackle in a pinch. He was really good at tackle for Kansas State. He was the best guard in the country for the last 2 years.
Yep.
Those are just especially in pass protection. He's so consistent in pass protection that I don't see how Cooper Beebe should get out of the second round either. I really don't. I texted you the stat yesterday when I was looking at it. For his career at Kansas State, when he lined up at guard, his grade was 83.3. When he lined up at tackle, his grade was 83.1. He's just a friggin' football player.
Yeah.
Honestly, Cooper Beebe is just like just so, so reliable. Like, I remember even back in the day of, like, I think about, like, Gabe Jackson was taken in the second round, and everyone knew. They were just like, you know, he's probably not an all-pro, but he's a starter. There's no way he's not. And I think Cooper Beebe, especially with the floor he gives you in pass protection, he's been the best pass protector in the country for the last 3 years.
Yep.
At if you take any of the offensive line spot, it's just crazy how good he is. I think a 94.8 pass blocking grade or something I found. It's nuts how good he is. So I think Cooper Beebe's an easy second-round pick, and I could flip-flop him or Haynes 4 and 5 and wouldn't have an issue.
I'm glad you agree with me, Dalton, because my top – we actually have the same players in the top five, just different order. Number one, easily, Jackson Powers Johnson at Oregon. I think you mentioned he's the best center in college football this past year. I believe he led the nation in both pass blocking and run blocking grade, which is pretty rare for a player. He is fantastic. Also, guard versatility, too. He had an 80-plus graded guard last year for Oregon. So, obviously, he doesn't have you can't really play tackle, obviously. But if you need him to play guard or center, I mean, he could do either. So, I think Jackson Powers Johnson is going to be a first-round pick. And he was fantastic this past season. Graham Barton at number two. I put him at number two because I think he's got that tackle versatility. And he was elite at left tackle for Duke. You mentioned he could play center, could play guard, where you might play in the NFL as well. Play all five positions on the offensive line, man. And that's going to be really, really valuable. I love the 49ers fit for him, too, because I think that really is a great spot for him and a team that really just needs offensive linemen in general. Having a guy who can play all five positions at probably a high level is really valuable. So Graham Barton at number two, great interview. If you want to check out that interview with him, we did last year. One of my favorite interviews I've ever done, Dalton, was number three, Cooper Beebe from Kansas State. And I'm happy that you're with me, man, because I think this guy is getting criminally slept on in the NFL draft process right now. Actually, a funny story, Cooper Beebe, I want to put out from the interview. He was thinking about going to Kansas, and he and his dad visited Kansas together. And they knew one of the coaches there. And Cooper was like, hey, and I'm thinking about committing here. And the coach was like, don't commit here. We're all getting fired after the season's over. And Cooper was like, oh, okay. So then they did get fired. And obviously brought in Lance Leipold. And they've done a great job since. And Cooper went to Kansas State. Did an awesome job there. He mentioned how he wanted to go back to Kansas State, get in the Ring of Honor, and become. And I think he has to become a consensus All-American to do that. And he did that this past year. Fantastic player, elite pass blocker, elite run blocker. You mentioned, dude, the versatility he had. I mean, he played tackle for Kansas State, didn't allow a sack, and tackle and guard didn't allow a sack for like 3 years in a row, man. It was absolutely absurd. Great run blocker, too. And the number one thing that's talked about with Cooper Beebe and why people see him as a day three prospect is, well, he's not an elite athlete. BS he's not an elite athlete. He tested out as a 93rd percentile athlete in the relative athletic score. So that you could throw that out the window. Cooper Beebe is a fantastic football player who's an elite athlete. There are, for me, there are very little concerns with him at the NFL level. So I do not agree with at all the concerns of the athletic limitations, because he tested out the combine as one of the best athletes at the guard position. So he is a fantastic player. I have him as number 3. Zach Frazier, I have at number 4. Love him at center. He's been a great center for West Virginia. I think you mentioned it great. The wrestling background clearly shows up with him. He's a mean player, and I love that in interior offensive lineman, so I love him there. And at number 5, I have Christian Haynes from UConn, who, again, really good player at UConn the past couple years, has been one of the better guards in the country over the past couple years at both pass blocking and run blocking. He's a really, really good athlete as well, tested out in the 92nd percentile for athleticism score. I love Christian Haynes as well. I think all 5 of these guys, you can make an argument, should be second-round picks, honestly. I mean, they are all very, very talented football players. But who is the sleeper that you're kind of keeping an eye on right now in the interior offensive line class right now, Dalton?
I'm going deep here. I'm going deep here. And this guy who stuck out to me because of his grade profile. Let's get Miami's Matt Lee, the center from Miami. Spent 4 years at UCF and then this past year at Miami. Really, over the last 3 years, Max, at center, you look in this class and you look at pass block grade, and it's Jackson Powers Johnson, and then it's Matt Lee second. He's one of the best pass protectors in this class. He's a little bit small. He's not like a dominant run blocker by any means. Probably, again, better in that zone scheme where you can kind of work angles instead of brute force, right? But he led the nation in true pass block grade this past season down there at Miami after a couple years at UCF and Gus Malzahn's offense, where he can hide a little bit. He had really good grades, but it was some things that he was slowly getting better at. But he was, other than Powers Johnson, you could argue he was the best pass pro center in the country this past year. Now, I went back looking for guys who kind of fit this profile of like centers who are better pass blockers than run blockers. It was hard to find a comp for Lee. There's some guys who are close. There's like Eric McCoy and Cesar Ruiz, who both play for the Saints now. Sam Mustipher, who's been around, bounced around. Bradley Bozeman, who's been a solid player, Baltimore and Carolina. I think he's with the Chargers now, back with Greg Roman. Like, there are guys who comp and were and have been and are solid football players right now. It's a really weird profile, and not one you see very often at center, because like the best players at center we generally think of are the run blockers, right? The Tyler Linderbaums and John Michael Schmitz and the one for the Cowboys, but Travis Frederick, that's the name I was thinking of. They've had so many linemen from Wisconsin. But it's a weird profile, but I think it's one I would take like probably a 6th round chance on, just based on, again, the pass pro floor is so, it's just so important. Pass protection, you've seen, you know, last year, like even there's probably 5 or 6 teams in the NFL that just couldn't function at all because they couldn't pass protect. So if I'm looking for a guy like that at center, I might look at Matt Lee from Miami.
I love that shout, man. I think Matt Lee was one of the better centers in the country this past season. He actually, again, we've kind of been similar in a lot of the sleepers that we like. That would have been a guy that I probably would have gravitated towards too if you didn't take him. But the guy I wanted to shout out, and this one's interesting, Dalton, because you actually texted me about him. You're like, interior line's tough to make rankings for, but I know for a fact this guy will not be in my top 5. And I was like, oh, I actually like that guy. So I'm going to go Bo Limmerman from Arkansas, who I will admit, his tape at center this past year was not very good. And I think Arkansas made a mistake in putting him at center. But I will say, when you look back at his tape at guard, it was a lot better. So I think he's a guard in the NFL. I really, really like what he showed there. Now, he has to work in his pass blocking a little bit, but I think he's a really, really good in, probably better in a zone scheme, probably, but he's shown the ability to work in a gap scheme. But I don't know. I like Bo Limmer a lot. I don't think his tape this past season really did him any favors. But the year before, he had 80-plus grades in both pass blocking and run blocking. This past year, still a really good run blocker, 77.6 run blocking grade, but only a 61.5 pass blocking grade. So, again, would not play him at center, but I do think he's someone that, I don't know if he will become a starter at guard, but I think he's someone that you could potentially look at maybe down the line becoming like a fringe starter for a team right now. So I like Bo Limmer. I thought he was one of the better and also an elite athlete too, 98th percentile athlete in terms of the athletic score too. So I like Bo Limmer a lot in probably his zone scheme, but again, I can see some of the concerns that you had when watching his tape, when you look at his center tape, but to me, he screams guard, and when you look back at his guard tape, it was a hell of a lot better than what he showed at center this past year. So that's what we got, man, for our top five players at every single position right now in the offensive side of the ball for the NFL draft. Obviously, we'll do defense next week. Real quick, Dawn, how would you, what would you say is the strongest offensive position in this draft, and what would you say is the weakest one as we head into the draft?
I think the strongest one's receiver. Yeah. There's no question. There's going to be – we're going to be calling out guys on the Saturday and in the fifth and sixth round. We're like, wow, those are good football players, man.
Yeah.
There's just so many. I believe somewhere around 20 of our top 80 guys on the PFF draft board are wide receivers. Yeah. It's receiver easily. I would say the thinnest – it's probably – I think it's tight end. I think the top two guys are really, really solid. I think they're two guys that are going to go – on day two for sure. And then I think you're talking about guys who might be bordering on third round, early fourth round. Sinnott might be a third round pick for me. I think beyond the top two, there is a steep drop off at tight end, and you're looking at either a lot of role players or projects at that spot.
Interesting. Okay, I would agree that receiver. I would also shout out offensive tackle, too. I think it's a loaded tackle class, one of the better I've ever seen. Good quarterback class, too, I think, too. I mean, you could see six quarterbacks go in the first round. I wouldn't be surprised by that. I would say the thinnest one, probably running back. Now, I do like, when we get to day two, I do like the options there. But I don't know if there's going to be a running back taken in the top 50 of this draft. There might not even be a running back taken in the first two rounds of this draft. And I haven't done the research as to when the last time that happened. But, yeah, I mean, that's pretty rare, man. You usually see – I mean, sometimes we see a first-round running back or two, like we saw last year. But we haven't seen running backs go that low in quite a while. So I would probably say, you know, if we're not going to get a running back in the first two rounds, that is probably the position that I would go with right now as maybe the thinnest, at least on the offensive side of the ball, in the NFL draft right now. But obviously, we're going to go over our defensive rankings next week. We'll have some hot takes in that one as well, kind of like the Dalton's Jaden Daniels number one take. I think I'm going to have a couple of those kind of takes on the defensive side of the ball next week, so we're very excited about that. So make sure you like and subscribe to the channel. Follow our audio-only stuff as well on Google, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And yeah, man, I'm excited to get deeper into draft season with you as we're about a month away now from the 2024 NFL draft. So for producer Eli back there in the studio, for Dalton Wasserman, I'm Max Chadwick, and we'll see you guys next time.